Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
As we mentioned at the top of the show today, we're marking the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. This morning, world leaders gathered at the Normandy American Cemetery to honor the living and remember the thousands who perished that day. Sound there of the 21-gun salute from this morning's Normandy ceremony. There for the ceremony was Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch, who we spoke with just moments ago about what it means to be there today.
I'll tell you, this has been very, very emotional. I'm on Juno Beach right now. There's a joint ceremony between the U.S., the British, the Canadians, the French, the Polish, and Norwegian governments, that all the forces that participated at the invasion of Juneau. We had the ceremony this morning at Omaha Beach with the U.S. and French governments. So it's really been just remarkable, you know, to actually be here and see the actual circumstances of, you know, and the ground and the beach where so many of our sons perished on D-Day. It's a very, very emotional. I didn't expect this, you know, because it's 75 years ago, but really, really powerful example, and the connection between countries as well. You know, there's a certain bond, I think, that was created, you know, during that whole experience for our nations, and it's very palpable here.
Well, Congressman, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, in World War II, we saw the Allied forces come together to defeat the Nazis, who represented this kind of existential threat to humanity. And at the top of our show today, we heard a little bit from Supreme Commander of Allied Forces Dwight Eisenhower from his D-Day message. And I just want to play another piece from his message to the Allied forces before the invasion.
The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory.
And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation lately over whether we are alienating some of our allies on the global stage. Is there a lesson here about the importance of allies?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that this example, D-Day, when our very freedoms were at stake, it was the fact that the United States and Great Britain, France, the democracies of the world stepped forward and, you know, just changed history and saved the freedoms that we enjoy today. But they were purchased at a very high cost. I don't know if people understand that or appreciate that. I think sometimes we take it for granted, but this was a time, D-Day, when our freedoms actually hung in the balance. You know, we had a fascist dictator and Hitler and a whole different view of humanity and what people's rights were and how people were viewed.
And for you as a U.S. congressman, you mentioned it was emotional, but what were you hearing from the U.S. veterans who were there today?
No, just unbelievable. So five of them received the Legion of Honor from President Macron, and it was really, and they read the descriptions of their conduct under fire, very, very powerful. And also the Battle Monuments Commission was able to identify a half dozen of my neighbors from South Boston, families, you know, sons of South Boston who died on D-Day. So I was able to visit their graves and say a prayer and pay respects. So there was a local dimension to this as well.
And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about how we care for veterans and whether we're providing enough support for them when they return home. And actually, on our show on Monday, we're going to be talking to the head of the VA, Robert Wilkie. So I'm just wondering if, you know, thinking about D-Day and veterans, if you have a message for the head of the VA.
Well, we just had, so my committee, I'm the chairman of the National Security Subcommittee, and we just did a hearing about 3 weeks ago on veteran suicide. And, you know, I was in Afghanistan not long ago, and I met some Marines there that were on their seventh tour of duty, you know, being on the front line over and over and over again has to have a, you know, a corrosive effect on your, you know, psychiatric well-being. And I think we don't put the resources in there that we need to. So, you know, we've got about 3 million veterans who have served since the Gulf War. And, you know, this steady drumbeat of suicides is a warning to us. And I think we have to change up the way we're addressing the psychiatric and psychological needs of our returning veterans. I think that transition period is really much more precarious than we assume.
I want to read another quick excerpt here from a letter that Eisenhower famously wrote. It's In Case of Failure. And he wrote, "My decision to attack at this time and place was based upon the best information available. The troops, the air, and the Navy did all that bravery and devotion to duty could do. If any blame or fault attaches to the attempt, it is mine alone." I'm just wondering, from you, Congressman, as a leader in our community, as a U.S. representative, what lesson you hear there about the weight of holding public office?
You know, thank God for Ike, you know, holding that coalition together and also taking on that responsibility, because it was his call. It was his call. They were going to wait another 3 weeks if they didn't get this tied on June 6, 1944. So.
Yeah, and finally, Congressman, you know, as we mentioned, this is the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and as many have noted, it's perhaps also the last major milestone anniversary that could include living veterans who were there, who will still be around for a commemoration. And so I'm wondering, finally, why it is important to remember this day, and what would you like people to be thinking about as they reflect on D-Day?
Well, there were about 100 D-Day veterans there today, and yeah, they were all in there. Upper 90s, you know, some of them in amazingly good shape, apparently. But, you know, I would just ask people to think about what it took for them to just put their lives aside. And the stories we kept hearing over the weekend, when we asked what they were thinking when they were coming in on those LSTs, they said, well, I should have been graduating with my graduation class. It was the first week of June, and that was our high school graduation, and I had signed up. Many of them had lied about their age, and just the heroic conduct here, people stepping up for the benefit of others, stepping up on behalf of their fellow Americans.
Congressman Stephen Lynch represents the 8th Congressional District of Massachusetts. He joined us from Normandy, France, the site of the D-Day invasion. Congressman Lynch, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jamie.
And joining us now to reflect more on the importance of the day is Andrew Basevich. He's a professor emeritus of military history at Boston University and a retired U.S. Army colonel who spent more than 20 years in active service as an Army officer, including during the Vietnam War. Andrew Basevich, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Oh, thanks very much.
So you served. You're an historian. How are you reflecting on today?
Well, I guess three things. First is I'm impressed by the scope, the scale, the magnitude of what Franklin Roosevelt called the mighty endeavor. You know, there were thousands of ships, over 1,000 airplanes, 175,000 troops that landed at Normandy, and that's something that we could not do today. And certainly will never happen again. So it was an incredible logistics feat.
When you say we couldn't do it today, do you mean just because of the way our military is?
Well, war has changed radically. So one could argue we wouldn't need to do it again. But when you think about the quantity of weaponry, goods, supplies, food, fuel that was assembled in England in order to make this possible, the numbers are truly staggering. Among other things, it was an incredible logistics accomplishment. The second thing I would say is that it's fascinating to me listening to Congressman Lynch talk about the participation of the United States and its allies in this incredible, historically important event without ever mentioning the Soviet Union. Because the fact of the matter is, D-Day could not have happened were it not for the fact that the Red Army had an enormous number of German divisions tied up on the Eastern Front. I mean, the Russian perspective on D-Day, I suspect even today, is why did it take you guys so long to get into the fight? And to say that is not to diminish at all the bravery of those who landed on the beach 75 years ago, but it does provide a slightly different historical context. It's interesting to me that basically Mr. Putin has, for all practical purposes, been excluded from this celebration, again, when in fact, in June of 1944, the Russians were a crucial ally.
Go ahead. No, well, I was just going to ask you to, because it was 75 years ago, to remind us of the strategic importance of this one beachhead.
Well, the strategic importance was if the West, here we're talking the Great Britain, the United States, and the Canadians particularly, if the West was going to play a role in liberating Europe from Nazi domination and therefore prevent Europe from becoming entirely the property of Stalin's Soviet Union, then Allied forces needed to gain a foothold on the continent and to begin to fight their way toward Berlin. Getting to Berlin wasn't a key thing, but defeating the Wehrmacht, playing a role in defeating the Wehrmacht, was crucially important strategically, politically, and morally. And so that story of liberation begins at Normandy 75 years ago. My third point, though, is as I listen to all this, I'm just struck by how poignant it all is. Because in some respects, D-Day marks the beginning of the it's the creation story of what we generally refer to as the West. This political partnership bound together by values, liberal values, democracy. In a sense, it all begins at Normandy 75 years ago today. And this entity that we refer to as the West plays a crucial role, not simply in World War II, but in for decades after the war, throughout the Cold War, when the Soviet Union is no longer an ally, but now an adversary. And I cannot help but think that that story is now coming to an end. You know, in the age of Donald Trump, with the United Kingdom arguing about Brexit,
right,
with disunity, and in some senses illiberalism in parts of Europe, this whole idea of the West doesn't seem to have as much resonance as it once did. And to the extent that that's true, you have to feel a little bit sad about that.
You know, earlier in our conversation with Representative Stephen Lynch, we heard Eisenhower, like I quoted from the letter that Eisenhower wrote about taking complete responsibility if D-Day was a failure. And I just was struck by that because it's sort of hard to imagine a leader today saying something like that.
You are so right. And that's why that statement, which fortunately he never had to issue, is so admirable. And I think even today, inspiring. So here was a leader bearing enormous responsibilities, contemplating the possibility of failure, and committing himself in advance to assuming responsibility for that failure, personal responsibility. And in our present political moment, whether we're talking about civilian leaders or military leaders, it really is almost impossible to imagine anybody showing that sense of responsibility. And it's a telling reminder, I think.
Another thing that I found interesting to think about today and on the 75th anniversary of D-Day was this idea that they were 18, 19-year-old, essentially boys storming the beach in an event that changed the course of history, and that they were willing to make this ultimate sacrifice. And so just in thinking about those who go abroad to fight and then come back home today, what more should we be doing to support and care for them?
Well, I don't know that I would exactly frame the question that way, even though you're touching on a very important subject.
So how would you
frame
it?
The issue here is that those who fought and won the war were citizen soldiers. They were citizens, our fellow citizens, who for a brief period of time donned the uniform. My father served in World War II. He was doing convoy escort duty. He wasn't at Normandy. My mother served. She was in the Army Nurse Corps. Served in the Pacific. When my father died, my mother married my stepfather. Served at Normandy with the 101st Airborne Division. These were not professional military people. They were citizens in uniform. And that's worth thinking about because, of course, today that's not the military we have. The military we have today consists of professionals. And we have come to accept, I think wrongly, we have come to accept the fact that the military is they and we are somehow different, set apart.
Okay, because it can be so easy to sort of separate out, you know, that's happening over there, but it might not affect so many millions of Americans.
It doesn't affect us. I mean, we mouth platitudes about supporting the troops. We certainly do care to a considerable degree about ensuring that, you know, soldiers who are hurt, injured, damaged, to get the VA services. But in World War II, one of the striking aspects of World War II, and not just World War II, it was true in World War I, it was true in the Civil War, was a bond between the military and the American people. And somehow that bond was at the very core of the way of the American way of war. And after Vietnam, that bond went away. It has never been restored. The loss tends not to be acknowledged. And guess what? Despite the enormous capacity of our present-day military, when we look at the range of contingencies, interventions, small wars, medium-sized wars that we've been engaged in since the abandonment of the citizen-soldier concept, we don't win very often. And that, too, seems to me to be something that really deserves to be talked about a lot more than it is. There's something wrong with our military system. And when I say military system, I mean the way we go about forming our military. It seems to me that you can make an argument that it doesn't necessarily serve the interests and well-being of the American people today.
Well,
that citizen soldier, that citizen army that fought in World War II and won decisively, well, they certainly served the interests of the United States quite admirably.
So, Professor Emeritus of Military History at Boston University, Andrew Bacevich, you've given us a lot to think about here on the 75th anniversary of D-Day. So thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it.
You bet.